Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Today on the Joseph Carlson Show, we're finally in December. We're getting towards the end of the year. It's that time of the season when we start making New Year's resolutions, when we start thinking about the future. What are we going to accomplish in 2024? Well, I want to do the same thing with my investing strategy. In this episode, we're going to be looking at what I've done over the past year. So far, year to date, what is my performance for my portfolio? We're going to be looking at the performance against the benchmark S&P 500 for the past 2 years. And then we'll also be looking to the future. What am I going to do differently in 2024? There's a lot to talk about with this strategy and how it's performed over the past 2 years. In fact, so much to talk about that I've broken this down into bullet points. We're going to be going over each one. This includes all of my thoughts of what's happened over the past couple of years, and I also have a warning I'll be giving in 2024. So we have a lot to get into. This is going to be an exciting recap episode of looking back the past couple of years and looking forward into the future. Now, we do also have some other news we'll be covering as well. Take-Two Interactive released their Grand Theft Auto 6 trailer. They actually released it ahead of schedule because it was leaked on Twitter. The trailer right now already has over 77 million views, and in fact, Mr. Beast tweeted that the trailer within 16 hours had surpassed his most viewed YouTube video in the first 24 hours. So it beat it by a long shot. Now, we did learn a couple things new with the trailer. One of the big things that I learned is that the game is going to be released not next year in 2024, but 2025. That was a pretty big reveal. We'll be discussing what that means for Take-Two Interactive. Now, we also have some news that Gene Munster came on and said one of the claims that's been often repeated, that AI is going to be bigger than the internet. I'll be sharing my thoughts on the validity of that statement, whether I think AI will be bigger than the internet, and a more important question than how big AI will get. And then finally, we have news that Spotify is laying off 1,500 employees. This follows a trend of big tech companies cutting down in size, laying off employees for profitability. We'll be discussing why this is happening more frequently. Now let's go ahead and start off with a recap of what's happened in 2023 and where I see my portfolio and my strategy going in 2024. I want to look at this on a list to make it a little bit easier to follow. So number one, my current investment strategy is working. I buy high quality companies and focus on the long-term durable earnings and cash flow growth. Now, this may seem like it's obvious. It may seem like everyone's doing this, but I can assure you, not every investor is doing this. In fact, I would say very few investors actually do this investment strategy. Most investors are incredibly focused on the multiples companies trade at. The big decision of whether or not they buy or sell a company is based on whether it's trading at a 20 multiple, a 25, or a 30. Whether it's trading at a 10 forward PE ratio or a 15. They focus on short-term multiples over the long-term durable earnings growth. You can see that happening right now. Think about the companies that value investors are jumping into today. They're buying companies like the Walt Disney Company that's trading at $90 per share. The reason being is because the multiple has dropped down to a PE ratio of below 20. They're buying companies like Dollar General, trading at a 17 forward PE. They're buying companies like PayPal, trading at a current 10 forward PE and a 4% free cash flow yield. Why are they buying PayPal? Because the multiple has dropped. There's investors buying into Paramount Global because the company trades at an 11 forward PE ratio. And that list continues on. There's a lot of companies that trade at lower multiples than the ones in my portfolio. The type of companies that I'm buying, ones like S&P Global, MasterCard, and Intuit, trade at above market multiples. They're on average more expensive companies if you base the price over the next 12 months earnings expectation. Even restaurant companies like Texas Roadhouse and Chipotle are on average more expensive than the market when you look at a forward PE ratio. Costco's another one that routinely trades at a higher multiple than the rest of the market. Yet these are all companies that I don't only buy, but I continue to hold them despite the fact they trade at a little bit higher of a multiple. Now that is again because I prioritize the quality of a company above the short-term multiple the company trades at. And I think ultimately this strategy will win out. For example, we can see illustrated here that the returns that you get in the market are driven heavily by earnings per share growth, by companies in aggregate growing their earnings year over year over year. That is what drives stock returns over the long haul. Sure, multiple expansion or compression plays a role in the short term, but if you're a long-term focused investor, you want to buy companies that can consistently grow earnings above market. That is the strategy that I'm doing. And we see this type of thing not in just the past 20 years. We see the same data for the past 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 years. Over long stretches of time, the returns that you get in the market are driven by earnings per share growth and free cash flow per share. They're not driven by multiple expansion. That can be a temporary boost, but it's never a long-term solution. So one of the criticisms that I often receive is that my companies are expensive. They're companies that are too expensive, and because of that, I'm going to have lower returns. But I see no evidence of that. The companies that I'm buying are not expensive when you look at their earnings on a 5-year or 10-year basis, and most of them have much higher free cash flow per share growth than the average of the market. On a total return profile of the entire company, I still believe that these companies are the cheaper part of the market. They're the ones that will have outsized gains. One piece of exclusive content that I give out every single month to Patreon members is a look at my portfolio, the performance of it, and the allocation. At the very beginning of this one pager, it goes over my portfolio strategy, the type of companies I'm looking for. I'm looking for the exceedingly high quality companies. They're ones that are scalable, cash-rich balance sheets, huge distribution, network effects. These companies have predictable returns on their R&D and CapEx. They're usually gatekeepers, monopolies, or toll booths. These are the type of monopolistic, incredibly powerful companies that I want to invest in. Occasionally, you can find these companies for cheap. That does happen from time to time. There was a time period where Apple was trading at a 14 to 15 PE ratio, but that is a rare occasion. In most cases, these companies will trade at a slightly higher valuation than the rest of the market. But either way, my belief is, on average, they're going to be a better buy than most companies in the market. So the first thing that I've concluded looking back is that the strategy has been working. Now, it says my investment strategy, but that's not really accurate. This is basically the Warren Buffett playbook. It's his strategy to focus on higher quality companies at a reasonable price rather than lower quality companies at a great price. That is taken straight from the Buffett playbook. So I can't claim this as my own, but I will say that it has been working. The way that we can measure if it's working, well, the proof is in the pudding. We can simply look at the returns that I've had against the S&P 500. I measure my portfolio performance based on two things, the time-weighted and money-weighted returns. On the calculation here, we have the money-weighted returns every single month, and we have 2022 and 2023 year-to-date. In 2022, my portfolio returned minus 16.22%. The S&P 500 went down a little bit more. It returned minus 18.14%. So we beat out the S&P 500 by around 2% in 2022 on a down year. So far this year, 2023, year to date, we've returned 24% against the S&P 500's 20.34%. So we've so far beat out the S&P 500 by around 4% this year. So in 2022, my portfolio beat the market by a little bit, only a couple percentage points, which doesn't seem like a big deal, but it proved that these type of companies actually do well during corrections. When the market goes down, people flee for quality. They suddenly want companies that don't overleverage, that don't have poor balance sheets. They want companies with solid, proven business models. So in the case of market corrections or recessions, people move to quality, and that means that quality companies typically hold up a little bit better. Now, that's great that the portfolio has proven somewhat defensive, but we also want to capture upside when the market takes off. We don't want to be left behind and see the S&P 500 go up 20% while we sit flat. And what this portfolio has proven is that it does capture upside. A lot of the companies are tech companies. They grow earnings fast. They know how to adapt. Being capital light gives them a huge advantage. So they can push earnings per share growth. They can push free cash flow per share growth. And they do capture substantial upside. So I'm happy about the performance and especially the fundamentals of my companies over the past 2 years. I think they've held up incredibly well. But this is where I start to give a warning. I start to see some red flags. After a portfolio has done really well for a couple of years and beat the market, that is when it starts to attract attention. A lot of people look at this recent performance and think that it's the magical solution to making gains. So I see more and more people copying the exact buys of mine, copying the exact portfolio. Keep in mind that a lot of the companies that I bought into, I waited patiently until I found them attractive buys. A lot of the companies like S&P Global, MasterCard, and Intuit, I bought into these companies specifically because I found them on a dip. And that has helped out the performance this year. And the problem with this portfolio doing so well over the past couple of years is that you may start to believe that it does well every year. That in 2024, it'll soundly beat the market. And in 2025 and in 2026. But that's typically not how things work. No strategy outperforms in every environment. No portfolio beats the market every single year. That is not how investing works. In fact, because my portfolio has performed so well in 2022 and 2023, that statistically makes it more likely to underperform next year. I'm more likely to underperform. So the warning here is to not copy my strategy expecting consistent outperformance every single year. That is an incredibly unrealistic expectation. What I'm hoping to do is over long stretches of time, beat the market. But there's no guarantee that I'll beat the market every single year. In fact, that is incredibly unrealistic. So I want to make this warning completely clear. If you look at my portfolio and you copy some of my holdings, my investment strategy, or my portfolio, that's up to you to do. I can't stop you from doing that. But you need to make sure that you own your decisions. It is your decision to invest in those companies. I am not making that decision for you. I'm investing my own money, taking on my own risks. I am not investing your money. I do not guarantee performance of any kind. I don't know how 2024 is going to turn out. In the future, I will make mistakes. You're going to see some companies have problems in the future. So it's okay if you look at videos and you get different investment ideas and different thoughts to consider, different perspectives, but make sure for yourself that if you end up buying into a stock that you fully own that decision and any outcome or consequences of it. I make no guarantees and I will make mistakes in the future. Now finally, as far as I'm concerned, looking into 2024, I will continue with my current strategy of investing and holding compounding machines. These type of great companies that will grow earnings per share and free cash flow per share every single year. I think I have a good group of compounding machines so far. I've assembled a decent team for my portfolio, but I'm always scanning different prospective companies, different ones that are on the watch list. I'm always doing research of different companies to see if there's better opportunities. But as of right now, I see no urgent reason to change around my portfolio. I feel very confident in the positions I hold. But this is basically what I wanted to share. I feel like it's a needed warning that anytime you start doing well, especially on social media, where you have people looking at what you're doing, a lot of people draw unrealistic conclusions from past performance. They believe that since Joseph did well over the past couple of years and things seem to be going well, that it's going to go well forever without any hiccup or any problem. And that's certainly not the case. So I thought it was a good time to give a bit of a warning. I'm hoping for the best in 2024. I think my portfolio will do well, but there's certainly no guarantee. And if statistics shows us anything, it's that when you go through a stretch of great performance, you're likely due for some type of struggle, some type of hiccup of some sort of another. So I'll do my best to avoid it. I'll try to make smart judgment and smart decisions, but ultimately the future's unknown and we'll see how 2024 goes together. Now moving on, I want to jump into some news here. We finally had the release of the Grand Theft Auto 6 trailer and it was released ahead of schedule. It was supposed to be released this morning, but because the trailer was released on X, Rockstar was forced to just say, hey, here's the trailer from a valid source. So here we have it, the Grand Theft Auto trailer. Now I'm not going to do a full trailer review or anything like that. All I'll say is it looks like what you would expect. I think they met expectations with their initial reveal of this game. It looks very full and immersive. The thing that I'd highlight is that within 19 hours, this trailer has 79,900,000 views. So we have 80 million views in 19 hours. This could hit 100 million views before 24 hours. And this was released outside of its normal schedule. This trailer has so many views that MrBeast, who recently held the record of having the most viewed video within the first 24 hours, he tweeted out that it was passed up by GTA 6 trailer, and it's now up another 10 million. This video has been viewed more than any other video on YouTube in the first 24 hours by literally tens of millions of views. Now, out of the trailer, there's all these little Easter eggs and things that are being revealed, but from a business perspective, there was one reveal that I found a little bit shocking. In fact, I didn't even notice this when I first watched the trailer, but it set in on me. GTA 6 is coming out in 2025. So the fact that it's being released on 2025 instead of 2024 is big news, but there's also more news with this. We also learned that Rockstar has confirmed the initial release of the game will only be on consoles. It will not be on PC or desktop. And that is also very important to their revenue streams. One of the things that Take-Two has been really good at, and Rockstar in particular, is double dipping and triple dipping. Double dipping means you sell the exact same game twice to the same consumer. It's like selling the same movie two times to the same movie viewer. Now, how do you accomplish such a feat? Well, the way that they do this is first by only releasing it to console gamers. What this does is makes a whole group of gamers over here, PC gamers, very jealous of the console gamers. They're over here with their nice big computer setups and gaming setups, and they're looking at all the console gamers buying this game on console. But because they can't play it on their PC, a lot of them say, you know what? This is such a rare game. I want it so much. I'm going to go get a console and buy this game just for this game, even though I'd prefer to play it on the PC. A lot of them are not going to hold out. They're going to want to play it for the first year when it's on console. Then a year later, when it comes out on PC as well as console, they're going to buy it again to be able to play it on their preferred format, which is the PC. So there you have a huge group of people, millions of people, that are going to buy the same game twice. Remember that Group 1 comes out in 2025. Group 2 will probably come out on PC in 2026 or even 2027. So you have a couple of years between these two groups. Then you'll have another group of people with a new edition of the game that comes out for the new gen gaming systems on console. They'll be forced to essentially buy the game for a third time. So there's also going to be a group of people that end up buying the game three times. It sounds crazy, but it's not as crazy when literally years have passed between these three groups. It's not like they're going to buy the game repeatedly every single year. It'll be at least 3 to 4 years between Group 1 and Group 3. Enough time passes that people are okay buying the same game again for a different format or console. So Take-Two Interactive has essentially found out how to sell the same IP multiple times. It's something that other companies wish they could do, but they simply do not have the intellectual property or the marketing methods to be able to accomplish this. Now moving on, we have Gene Munster that went on to CNBC and he framed how important he believes AI will be for the future. And this is something that's often repeated. We've heard different phrases from different people saying that AI is going to be bigger than the internet, bigger than fire, bigger than any modern technology.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
I've used adjectives to describe what this transformation from AI is. The whole panel is optimistic. Most people are optimistic, but I think most people are understating what the significance of this is. And if I think about the scale of how transformative this is, if we put electricity at 100, I'd put AI at 90, I would put the internet at 50, and the smartphone at 30. I think it's that big of a deal.
Now, you can agree with this or disagree with this. There's arguments of how big or meaningful AI will be, but I think everybody agrees it's going to be incredibly meaningful. I don't think anyone is really disputing that, at least not right now. In this interview, Gene Munster goes on to pick out the companies that he thinks will be the best beneficiaries of AI, and he selects a couple names.
And I just want to, you know, give an example. We don't, at Deepwater, we don't own, we do not own NVIDIA. We do have the Deepwater Frontier Tech Innovator, its ticker LOUP. We own TSMC in that. TSMC trades at 8 times. They're the picks and shovels of this whole revolution. NVIDIA trades at 22 times. That's, as I like to say, you get your cake and ice cream too. You get the benefit of owning this transformative wave, but you get it at a better valuation. So there's a lot of good things going on when it comes to AI.
So he throws out a couple obvious AI plays, NVIDIA and TSM, companies that will supposedly benefit from the ongoing evolution of AI. And that may seem like these are obvious picks for AI, but I think history has proven that things are less obvious than they seem. When investors get caught up in extrapolating the importance of new technologies, they often forget that new technologies do not drive returns. Cash flows drive returns. And it's not always the case where the company coming up with new technologies produces the most cash flows. I've given many examples of this in the past. We can take the example of Apple. I don't believe anybody would call Apple a gaming company. They don't really create AAA games. In fact, they don't really create many games that you can think of. I doubt you can think of a single Apple game. But Apple likely makes more money from video games than almost any other company in the world. The reason they do that is because they have a platform in which they can extract value out of the gaming industry. Apple proves with their App Store that you don't necessarily need to be in the specific industry of gaming to make profit from video games. Just like a company doesn't need to be a so-called AI company to make profits from AI. And I personally believe the future is going to look a lot like the past. A lot of the companies that aren't even AI companies will likely make the most money from the advancements in AI. I'll give you some examples within my portfolio. One of the companies in my portfolio that's not an AI company, but talks about AI more than any company that I ever do analysis on, is Intuit. When you listen to their earnings call, their investors presentation, or any part of their material and what they're working on, basically everything they're doing is intermingling AI into all of their software. The company, after all, just creates accounting software, tax software, some CRM stuff. It's pretty basic stuff, but they are benefiting dramatically from AI. They use learnings from different parts of their company to benefit their entire company. But yet, not many people look at Intuit as an AI company, even though it's likely to make a lot of money from the advancements in AI. There's other entire industries that have essentially nothing to do with AI, like fast food, that have ample ways to benefit from the advancements in AI. These companies have massive network of restaurants where they need to keep track of inventory, procurement, different trends with customer volumes, peak hours, and downtime. There's a lot of ways these businesses can become higher margin with the implementation of AI. Now, I obviously agree that there's going to be some companies that benefit by their direct relation with AI, but there's going to be far more companies that indirectly benefit in ways that we don't imagine right now. Just like Apple benefits from video games so much without creating them themselves. Now, moving on, we have news that Spotify is laying off a significant portion of their company, 1,500 employees, and we get an inside look at what the memo looked like when Daniel Ek broke the news. He starts off saying, "Team, over the past 2 years, we've put significant emphasis on building Spotify into truly a sustainable business, one designed to achieve our goals of being the world's leading audio company, and one that will consistently drive profitability and growth in the future. While we've made worthy strides, as I've shared many times, we still have work to do. Economic growth has slowed dramatically and capital has become more expensive. Spotify is no exception to these realities." The Wall Street Journal notes that this is something common for any type of layoff memo. At the very beginning, they note economic conditions. That's exactly what Daniel Ek did here, and that's also what Amazon's Andy Jassy did when he laid off employees, calling the economic conditions uncertain. The next term that they highlight, which is the most popular term when doing layoffs, is the term right-sized. Right-sized simply means that the amount of employees fits with the company's economic profile. So if that gets disjointed and you have to get it back into size, you right-size the company. Now, the next part of the memo, he simply thanks the employees. For those leaving, we're a better company because of your dedication and hard work. Thank you for sharing your talents with us. Short and simple, so we can quickly move on to the next segment. I realize that for many, a reduction of this size will feel surprisingly large given the recent positive earnings report and our performance. We debated making a smaller reduction throughout 2024 and 2025. Yet considering the gap between our financial goal and our current operational costs, I decided that a substantial action to right-size our costs was the best option to accomplish our objectives. Today, we still have too many employees dedicated to supporting work and even doing work around the work rather than contributing to opportunities with real impact. This is what we call bloat in tech companies, or too many employees. When employees hire other employees, and those employees hire underneath them other employees, and that tree continues to grow, you're getting roles that don't directly impact the company's direction. A lot of jobs created to support other jobs at an organization. This is obviously what's been happening at Spotify, but they're not the only one. We see the very same thing happening at Google. Many of the employees at Google are roles supporting other roles in segmented parts of the organization, not having a meaningful impact on the core business of the company. Ultimately, he gets down to the bottom line of it. Being lean doesn't mean that the company has small ambitions. It means smarter, more impactful paths to achieve them. So they have a smaller team, but they're still moving forward with the same ambitions. And we've seen evidence of this over and over again in tech. The company behind ChatGPT started with only a handful of employees, and it's created one of the most meaningful products of the past decade. These businesses do not need to grow their amount of employees every single year consistent with their revenue. They can exercise far more operating leverage by keeping their employee growth far behind their revenue. Spotify stock, as a result of this announcement, is up 10% yesterday and another 1.78% today. The shares are trading higher amid workforce reductions because investors know that they have the talent to be able to create future products, and now they're running a more efficient business model that will drive profits. So I think it's a positive thing that Spotify is doing this, and I hope more tech companies will be very careful about their cost structure in the future. That's all for this episode. See you in the next one.